broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne. This is Wilmsfront, brought to you by theunshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wilms.
Hello and welcome to the show. The date is Wednesday, 1st of April, 2020. We are back live tonight on the Tim Wilms YouTube channel. It is 7 p.m. here in Melbourne. Sadly, this coronavirus pandemic, it's not a elaborate April Fool's Day joke by the globalists. It's still with us with more infections and deaths today. Over the past month, beginning here in Australia, we've witnessed panic buying, starting with toilet paper and then moving on to other basic staples. In the past few days, in response to firearm owners and users buying new guns and ammunition and more permits to acquire being lodged, the state Labor governments have forced gun stores to close. When it comes to disarming the citizenry, Australia has been a global leader since 1996. So what's the motivation for these firearm owners to buy extra weapons during this pandemic? Should others be worried about such a trend? Well, let's speak to an actual firearm owner, hunter, and sporting shooter. My guest tonight is Jason Selmers, is the host of the Australian Hunting Podcast, which has been in continuous production since 2011 and has over 40,000 downloads a month. Jason, welcome to the show.
All right, mate. Tim, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're the preeminent expert in Australia. Obviously, as I've said in the past, about firearms use and gun rights in Australia. I'm not a shooter myself, but I support people's right to hunt, sporting shoot. But since you're the expert here, I'll first ask you to provide a basic 101 summary on Australia's gun laws, or as they're also known, Australia's gun control laws.
Yeah, mate, they're, you know, obviously not very good. As most people know, the National Firearms Agreement was drafted in 1996 after Martin Bryant shot and killed 35 people and wounded some 25 more. Pretty much after that happened, there were sweeping gun regulations across the country. Obviously, we can't have things like suppressors. We can't have any semi-automatic firearms, either rimfire or centerfire. So things like a 22, things like a semi-automatic 308. We can't have semi-automatic shotguns. We can't have pump shotguns. It's a really, really sad state of affairs that, you know, Australian firearms owners in this country pretty much can't be trusted. All we're allowed access to pretty much is bolt action rifles. Still allowed to have some pistols, but there were some restrictions after the shooting in Melbourne. So they banned certain lengths of handguns, certain calibers of handguns, registered firearms back in 1996, as well as that raft of National Firearms Agreement. It's not really a good way for firearms owners at the moment. There's really, really bad things such as appearance laws in this country as well. So therefore, if a bolt action rifle, for an example, which is a fully legal Category A firearm in this country, if it looks like an AR-15 or a semi-automatic weapon, therefore, under the government, quote unquote, it is a semi-automatic weapon, even though it's not, have absolutely no rights to self-defense in Australia. It's obviously very difficult even to get your gun license at the moment. It's not that bad, but, you know, doing the right thing and getting your gun license, doing the required training and safety courses, most people are able to get it, provided you don't have a criminal record. But after those 96 gun laws, I mean, pretty much John Howard did a very, very good job in turning the general public against firearms owners, you know. And at the time, people had businesses. They lost businesses. People committed suicide. We're not just talking about the victims of Port Arthur. We're talking about business owners, financial breakups, family breakups, you know, children in broken homes. You know, people just don't realize the untold effect. And if shooters at the time actually got angry about it because they were having their rights, because they didn't do anything wrong, if they had their rights taken away and they were getting angry about it, people would say, and the government would say, well, see, look, they're angry people. Angry people shouldn't have firearms. But yet, if they tried to relate to the community and say, well, we are good people, you know, that didn't work either. So the really shooters of Australia were kind of in a really bad situation, the Shooters of Australia back in 96, you know, and John Howard did a very good job on demonising law-abiding firearms owners, and they've pretty much done a good job of that ever since. It's really sad state of affairs. It's a good community. It's a community of over a million shooters going out hunting, shooting, collecting meat, target shooting, getting the kids into it, families getting involved in it. There's more guns in circulation now than there was in 1996. So even with those draconian laws, they thought that would stem the flow of firearms into the law-abiding community, but unfortunately it hasn't done that. And a lot of the I'm 39 in about 2 weeks, so a lot of these young shooters coming up that are 18, they don't even know about Port Arthur. I was at the range probably 2 months ago talking to shooters, and these young guys came in and they were asking about laws, and they don't even know about Port Arthur. I mentioned it to them that they're like, what's Port Arthur? So these young shooters coming up, they're willing to go, jump the hurdles. They're willing to get their firearms license. They're willing to join a club. They're willing to go through what they need to do so they can get into this fantastic sport. And, mate, that's exactly what it is. Some of the best people in the community, no criminal record. You can't have a criminal record if you want to get your gun license. So you need to be from that section of the community that doesn't have a criminal record, that's of good nature, and, doesn't have any issues with the law, and, you're able to get a firearms license and partake in, hunting, shooting, and target shooting activities.
You gave John Howard all the credit there for the National Firearms Agreement and the gun buyback. You left out Tim Fischer, who was the Deputy Fischer. Prime Minister and Nationals leader at the time. And he retired in 99, but he was pretty influential in the party until he died last year, talking about the need for gun control. And the reason also why Australians seem pretty happy and safe with our gun laws is because they see all the mass shootings happening over in the United States, and they think that if there's any relaxation or we don't go further, because there are people who Gun Control Australia do want to go further, then we'll get mass shootings like there are over in the United States.
People, they say a lot about that. And, is America an anomaly? Yeah, sure. I think they've got some mental health issues they need to sort out, their medical system. That's a completely probably different discussion, probably for a different time. But, there's a many countries, even up until, and I'll talk about the one that's probably unpopular, even up until New Zealand last year, they had full access to suppressors, semi-automatic weapons, semi-automatic shotguns, pump-action shotguns, and they changed their gun laws. They had less than seven deaths per year with firearms up until, obviously, the Christchurch shooting, and then Jacinda Ardern came in with these, fairly draconian gun laws to remove semi-automatic centerfire rifles, but that still didn't go anywhere near as far as John Howard and Tim Fischer, as you mentioned, back in 1996. And a lot of farmers, people got to understand, a lot of farmers were very, very unhappy with Tim Fischer. And, a lot of people like to refer to America, but, New Zealand hadn't had a shooting since late 1997. That's almost, 22, 23 years, one anomaly to change laws in a country. I just don't think it's the way to go. There's many, many countries around the world, Sweden, Switzerland, Germany, Czech Republic, have these types of weapons, semi-automatic weapons, and they have some of the lowest gun homicide in the world. So I don't think we can necessarily make the correlation that more guns or more semi-automatic weapons equals more mass shootings, because there's just as many countries where it doesn't happen and they do have access to these rifles. I think it's Sweden have their own army and militia. They have to take a fully automatic firearm home and store it away in case they need to, use it. They get called upon to use it. Like I said, many countries around the world have these types of firearms, and they're just not a problem. Is it a cultural issue in America? Probably. There's a cultural issue, I think, with mental health. I think they need to fix up their medical system. But I've been over there many, many times in shooting, and I never once felt unsafe. I never felt unsafe at all. I thought it was a fantastic country. People, a huge, rich culture of hunting, firearms ownership. And when you mingle amongst those people, you realize that nobody in the shooting community or the hunting community wants to kill another person. They're human as well. Nobody wants to kill anyone. That's the last thing people have to do. But at least they have the rights to self-defense. They have a constitution that guarantees their right to bear arms. And I think ultimately, Australians don't really understand the Constitution. They don't really understand that the forefathers of America gave the citizens rights, and those rights can never, ever be infringed. And people can talk about changing the Constitution. It's just never going to happen. And, they're probably one of the last free countries in the world, to be brutally honest. And sometimes I wish I was born in America, because I really – look to their constitution as the freedom and the standard of freedom we should be experiencing around the world. Sure, they can fix up a few things, but if we talk about the homicide rate in the US, a lot of those are suicide. Depends on which year you look at, anywhere from 62 to 73% are suicide. Then we need to talk about gang crime as well. So when they talk about 50,000 deaths per year, it's fairly disingenuous if we take suicide out of the factor. We take in gang-on-gang crime. We take away police shooting criminals. The law-abiding community is absolutely minuscule in regards to the statistics. And in 14% of cases where a long arm is used, as in 14% of long arm I guess where people use a long arm, meaning a rifle, only 0.4% of those are actually committed with AR-15s. Majority of the crime is committed with a handgun. So I think if they were being, honest with themselves, then why aren't they trying to take the handguns? Why is it only the evil, AR-15, this black evil weapon that's, got this bad name? Most of the crime, especially in Chicago, you can't go a weekend in Chicago, which has one of the most draconian gun laws in probably America, including California and Washington, D.C., they can't defend themselves. It's very hard to get a firearm in those states, yet they have massive amounts of shootings just on a weekend. They could have 15 to 20 murders in a weekend. I mean, you were talking a bit earlier about the coronavirus, and Californians pretty much, a lot of Californians that do love their firearms, but there's also a lot of Californians that don't, that vote Democrat, and we've seen the other day, gun shops just absolutely flooded with people purchasing, wanting to buy ammunition, lined up around the corner because they're uncertain about whether the police are able to protect them, which we know the police can't protect people. Only the individual citizen can protect themselves. So, a lot of people talk about mass shootings. We've seen just recently as well, Jair Bolsonaro, he was elected in Brazil in early 2019 by second quarter, so July of 2019, gun homicide was down 25%. He opened up concealed carry. He opened up importation of firearms. Sure, right-wing leaning government. I'm not saying opening up firearms reduced the homicide by 25%. Obviously a tough stance by that right-leaning government. But at the end of the day, homicide's down 25%. So whichever way you look at it, whether it's a combination of opening up self-defense, whether it's the hard stance of the right-leaning party in Brazil, in 2014, for an example, they had 59,000 deaths with firearms, much more than the US, and they could barely own firearms in Brazil at that time. Sure, for some sporting purposes, but in general, it was generally a no-go in particular areas in Brazil. Same as Mexico. It's almost impossible to own a gun in Mexico. 35, 40,000 deaths per year, again, depending on which year you look at. Very hard to get firearms, yet still have massive amounts of gun homicide. And people say, well, they're not a Western country, so we need to look at Western countries. But I'm like, well, what, poor people's lives don't matter at all? So who cares if they're poor and from a third world country? Don't think that's really an appropriate stance to take. And if you look at the statistics, the highest places with the highest gun control, have someone's had the most mass shootings. Sometimes in some particular cases, we just need to make sure we're getting guns into the hands of good people and keep guns out of the hands of bad people. And if we can do that, I think we can, we start respecting each other again. I think that's gone downhill. I think the family unit has gone downhill, teaching our friends and family to look after each other. And I think if we change the culture, we can change the value for life. And I think if we do that, we're well on our way to reducing mass shootings. I don't know why it happens in America. It's a bit of an anomaly. And people think, I guess, they want to be celebrities. They want to go down like their, person in front of copycatting. And, it's just sad that we've come to this situation. But, it's a good sport. It's good to be part of. And I'm glad to be a firearms owner. I'm glad to go out and get my organic meat. And I love being part of this community. Otherwise, I guess I wouldn't be doing a podcast for the last 10 years, trying to get people politically active, write to their members, get involved, meet them, But at the end of the day, there's a bipartisan agreement between Labor and Liberal that, you know, gun owners are bad. They've been demonized. John Howard and Tim Fischer, as you mentioned, did a great job in demonizing firearms owners. And that's stuck around for the last 20 years. And we've seen what's happened about the shutting down of the gun shops.
You mentioned that the Australian shooting community has a million members, which is obviously where a country now of around about 26 million. So you're, even though you're a significant minority, still very much a minority. And it's all of the main electorates when it comes to election time are in the inner city and the suburbs. Most of those people there have never looked at a firearm. What they probably think about or believe about firearms is, well, they look at the mass shootings over in the United States or see the trigger happy movies where we just have random people shooting, and they think that gun owners and sporting shooters, they must have this blasé attitude as well, which makes it, as you talked about, John Howard and Tim Fischer, whether directly or indirectly, they've had that sort of effect where people view firearm owners as they must be some sort of dangerous, backward people. And with the closure of the gun shops, which is in the three Labor states, and obviously it's easy for the politicians such as Lisa Neville, our in Victoria police minister, to basically make the pitch that this is the right thing to do, because people are probably seeing these headlines and thinking, what are those firearm users planning to do with all those weapons? Are they planning to commit crimes against people? Are they going to start a revolution, march in the suburbs? What's up with it?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, firearms owners are going to do that, but obviously it's a time we've just never seen before. And probably about 2 weeks ago, probably started the dollar absolutely tanked, and word came out from a lot of gun shops that a lot of the products were going to be going up by anywhere from 10% to 20%, because the dollar went down to what I think 55 cents, I think. And people obviously heard that, they were worried about being able to get access to maybe reloading equipment, ammunition, firearms, plus paying a hefty premium based on the terrible dollar. So they decided to go out and, buy firearms, buy ammunition, stock up. And Lisa Neville, I mean, this obviously stuff, I'll go back to Lisa Neville in a minute, but this started in WA, and this is WA is probably the worst state for firearms owners. I mean, the WA police treat firearms owners like, the scourge under their feet. I mean, what business can you tell with not even 5 minutes' notice that you're going to shut down their business for really a period that no one knows how long it's going to be? No consultation, no nothing. They don't care about business. Government doesn't care about people. It's really is a sad state of affairs. And then probably a couple of days later, over the weekend, come Monday, I think it was, or late Friday, QPS, Queensland Police Service, weapons licensing, shut down all the gun shops in Queensland. Again, I know personally a guy in Queensland I know quite well that runs a business there. I mean, he's just beside himself. He doesn't know how to pay staff. He's renting a premises. Is the person that owns the premises going to be able to, pay rent? Are they going to be able to stay there? Putting staff off is their biggest thing. Are they going to go out of business? And then a couple of days later, we heard Victoria. And then Lisa Neville gets on the press conference and says, well, there were originally, I think it was per week, 1,000 permits to buy firearms, and that's doubled. Again, I go back to the dollar. People are getting out there to buy stuff because they're uncertain about the dollar. They're uncertain about what's going on in the world. Doesn't mean they're going to take up arms to defend themselves. I mean, I agree with self-defense. I think it should be a genuine reason to own a firearm to, at the bare minimum, be able to defend yourself in your own home. And until people have been into, or been involved in a break and enter where they've been severely hurt or killed, I don't think they can really judge other people for wanting to defend their families and, defend their children, at least the bare minimum at the moment, within the home. But, the government and the police treat firearms owners with disdain. I'm not sure if you've heard about the case just recently, Towner versus New South Wales Police. So Brad Towner owned a gel blaster. He was a retailer in New South Wales for about 10 years. Police had come on multiple occasions. It was never an issue. The firearms registry had came down as well. That was never an issue. All of a sudden, he gets a premises. And after 10 years of business, the New South Wales police come in, shut him down, take all his stock, charge him with a raft of firearms offences that, you know, the longer you can put, the longer they are. And he lost a lot. He lost his wife financially, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
What was the trigger for it?
I'm not sure on that. We don't really know. We're not sure if it came from the head honchos of New South Wales Police Force. We're not sure if it's coming from government. We've never really gotten that answer. And they treat gel blasters in this country like a category, it's classified as a category A air rifle. So in category A, that would be similar to a side-by-side or two-shot shotgun. Now, these things are in a lot of countries, classified as a toy. They're labeled as a toy. You can buy the little gel balls from Bunnings Warehouse. They go in those little plant pots that you put your plants in, and then you put water in them. They expand. Kids are running around the front having a great time. And can you believe in Australia in 2020 that a man has to spend 2 years fighting a case which is just totally, totally bogus? And thankfully, it was good to say that probably about 3 weeks ago, he was fully exonerated by a jury in less than 26 minutes. And what did the police do? Straight afterwards, they put out a memo, I guess you'd say, for the law-abiding firearms community saying, well, even though Towner versus the police, even though he got off, it's still classified as a Category A firearm. You can't have it. It's classified as an air rifle. It must be registered, even though you can't register these guns because they don't have serial numbers. It's a toy. It's a toy in every other country around the world that's allowed to have them. So, again, thankfully Brad got off, but unfortunately he lost a lot. You know, his business, those gel blasters aren't worth anything anymore that they seized off him 2 years earlier. Technology comes a long way in 2 years. You know, business losses, financial losses, personal losses. I mean, you know, really, honestly, police have a lot to answer for, mate. They really, really do in New South Wales and around the country, the way they demonize firearms owners. And I'm not sure if you saw this just a couple of, probably about 2 weeks ago. The police minister here in New South Wales, David Elliott, was caught on a range at a corrections range.
I covered
shooting
that.
A fully automatic, prohibited, a fully automatic weapon. You can't get a permit or a P650, as they call it, which is an approval to shoot on a range to try shooting for a Category R prohibited firearm. It's all been swept under the carpet. I can't believe if I did that and I was on a video shooting a fully automatic prohibited weapon, mate, I would have already been charged. I mean, if they're charging Brad Towner over gel blasters, I would have lost my guns. They'd be seized by police. But because David Elliott is the police minister, he's blamed corrections, he's blamed everybody other than himself. I mean, he should know the rules. He's been a staunch proponent of very strict gun laws. Now he finds himself at the peril of those same terrible gun laws. Now, I think he should be able to shoot it. It looks like fun. I don't think he was doing anything wrong, but the law says he was doing something wrong. Therefore, he needs to pay, he needs to be charged, and if it comes to it, he needs to be sent to prison because the average law-abiding shooter would be treated the exact same way. But because he's the police minister, he's blamed corrections. He's not exempt under the Act, the Firearms Act. He's not a police officer. He's not a corrections officer. There's no paperwork. There's no P650 for a fully automatic weapon. He must be charged, and I'm sorry, this just comes down, in my opinion, to we're getting into that corrupt territory. We really are, that they allow this to happen and they're covering for him. It's very sad indeed. And firearms owners just get treated like dirt in this country. But if you're a police minister, you seem to get away with whatever you want to get away with.
Well, you can add that to David Elliott's litany of gross errors and misconduct. I mean, the fact that he wasn't forced to resign when he was holidaying in Europe while New South Wales was on fire. He also defended the police strip searching minors. I could go on and on about the things that he's done, but that shows that, well, the fact that he got away with that, and the state, if they choose, they can, if they want to go after you, they can destroy your livelihoods. And, well, everyone's seeing this occur on a mass scale now with the shutdowns of businesses to fight the coronavirus and contain it. It's another topic of discussion whether those measures are needed. But in terms of hunting, because you're not allowed a firearm for self-defense in Australia, it's only for hunting and sporting shooting, but you could... Hunters can still operate within the social distancing guidelines when they're out bush, but of course that's not going to stop governments attempting to restrict firearm and hunting use during the pandemic.
Yeah, and getting back to what we said before about Lisa Neville, she put out there was I think it was per week 1,000 permits to acquire were giving out, went up to about 2,200. I mean, in one breath she says, well, we're a bit unhappy with the numbers that we're seeing. Well, what for? Law-abiding shooters don't do the wrong thing, and in any situation where they have done the wrong thing, I mean, those are absolutely minuscule amounts. And then she says, well, we don't want those items or that sort of buying pressure building up, that guns could get into the hands of criminals. Why would they get into the hands of criminals for? I mean, law-abiding citizens would take them home. They'd lock them in their car, bring them home, put them in their gun safe, lock up their ammunition. Where was the only discussion was in the same breath about talking about firearms owners as it was about criminals. I mean, this is the problem. Criminals don't get gun licenses. Criminals don't register firearms. We spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on firearms registration in this country. We register the law-abiding. Law-abiding on 99.999% of situations don't do anything wrong. And even when a small, very small number of law-abiding citizens, until they were law-abiding, until they become non-law-abiding, did the wrong thing, registration or licensing also didn't stop that either. So it doesn't stop criminals. It doesn't stop bad people doing things with bad things with firearms. And even in the most minor of situations, minuscule situations where, you know, a dispute had erupted and a person used their registered firearm to do something bad. I mean, again, those types of things, they just didn't stop good people. It didn't stop bad people. It doesn't stop anyone with bad intentions will always do bad things. And we've seen that. We've seen mass shootings in lockup. People say we haven't had a mass shooting since 1996. That's rubbish. We've had the lockup murders down in New South Wales. We've had the Margaret River murders in WA. We've had several. We've had the Darwin shootings where the guy was on the run in Darwin.
Which everyone killed four people. Has probably the anti-gunners, forgotten about, which was just last year.
Yeah, and the anti-gunners always change the definition of what is a mass shooting to create this effect that there haven't been any mass shootings. And I remember I've heard her say, Samantha Lee, she's the head of the Gun Control Australia, and I've heard her on ABC Radio National. I've still got the audio where she said, we have had mass shootings since 1996, yet after the fact, on subsequent media appearances, she said, we haven't had a mass shooting, yet I've got that on her ABC Radio National saying we have had mass shootings since 1996. So we can't stop bad people doing things with firearms. I mean, they're going to find a way to kill people, whether it's with firearm, whether it's with fire, knife. I mean, look at the things we've seen. You know, look at the heavy gun control countries. France, for an example. France had the Paris shootings and bombings, 140 plus dead. I mean, again, strict gun control. We had the Charlie Hebdo attacks. Where they brought semi-automatics into the country and they killed a lot of people. So just criminals will get firearms whichever way they want to go about it, they will get them. So I think police need to totally drop the, you know, we should be working in unison with police, gun owners and hunters working together to stamp out illegal activity and stopping criminals. That's what we should be doing, but police don't see that. They want to disarm the law-abiding. Only they should have guns. We've seen what happens when police don't train. There was a Hornsby shooting probably 4 years ago. The guy got out of the mental home. He was in the Piazza area of the local shopping center. The female officer pulled her handgun, missed him about four times, shot him in the stomach, and those other shots that didn't hit the target ended up wounding two old ladies. We saw it in the Lint Cafe siege where the lady was killed. And this is what they're saying. They're saying, well, it's a ricochet. I know guys that have been shooting steel with pistols like IPSC for 20 years, right, for an example, those types of activities where, maybe the rules 20 years ago weren't as strict as they are now. They were shooting targets at close range. They never got hit with shrapnel in tens of thousands of rounds. Yet we're meant to believe in two situations where the police went into the Link Cafe for number one. It was a ricochet. Okay, let's say we can believe that. Then they, and then another shooting some couple of years later. Oh, it's another ricochet off the water fountain. I mean, really, you know, two old ladies. And why haven't we heard about it? Because no doubt the government paid them off and, you know, had an order put on them that they can't talk about it, because we never heard from those two old ladies since. And, you know, I just hope they have a speedy recovery, which I hope they did. None of them passed away, which is fantastic. So we need to put, you know, I know guys that are very, very experienced with firearms, especially with pistols, rifles. They're trained. They know what to do. Yet as soon as you put a badge on your shoulder and it says New South Wales or Victorian Police, people just think, well, they're proficient with firearms. Often they're not. One of my good friends is a detective. And I've asked her, how often do you shoot? She says, we shoot about 15 rounds a year. And I say, static targets or moving targets? Where generally, if you're shooting someone, you're a police officer, they would be most likely a moving target. No, they only shoot static targets. Hence the reason why when they do have to use the firearm, they end up shooting and wounding two old ladies. And, you know, again, I just want to, I want the shooting community, I want the police to start working with us. I was a big fan of the police. I think they do a good job in most situations. But on the flip side, I think, you know, community respect for police is just at all-time lows at the moment. And I just don't think when they charge people like Brad Towner for gel blasters, they're doing anything for their reputation. Years ago, before the social media webs came out, if I wanted to have a whinge about something, I would call you on the phone and we would have a whinge about it and you would go talk to your friends. I mean, I've got most of my groups and friends on Facebook. I've got 34,500 people on Facebook. Another friend of mine's got 20,000. Another group that I talk to a lot has 60,000. I mean, that's the way to get the word out to people that we're sick of just being treated like second-class citizens. And, you know, I know the police don't like sometimes the way we talk about them, but if we got that equally respect in return, I think we could work with police, get rid of illegal firearms on the street and have a great relationship with the police. But unfortunately, they don't. They just keep attacking law-abiding people, shutting down their businesses, no consultation, ban after ban after gun ban. Even after 1996, more guns have been banned for no reason whatsoever. And they're not showing any good faith that we would like to show them. So once we start seeing that, hopefully we can have a good relationship again with the police. But we need to see some equal efforts by them to come to the party and sit at the table instead of constantly saying, well, we want this, we want that, you know. And this is why the Americans often, when as soon as a piece of gun control legislation comes past, they nip it in the butt straight away. They know the slippery slope, because the reason always is from the anti-gunners is, oh, this is reasonable. Just one more piece of legislation. This is reasonable. And then it's more and more and more. And you never get anything back. That's the whole point. You never get anything back. And throughout this whole situation, to our organizations, because of the National Firearms Agreement and having to be a member of a club to get your gun license, they love the National Firearms Agreement. That's their cash cow. The organizations wouldn't survive without that NFA money. So they're not going to ever get rid of genuine reasons to own firearms. They're not going to get rid of, especially in New South Wales more so, which is mandatory attendances. If I have a target shooting on my license, I have to shoot four times per year to keep my license, whereas that is not anywhere in any other state in Australia. So in Queensland, if I don't want to shoot that year, I don't shoot. It's not a problem. In New South Wales, I can have my license taken off me if I don't shoot, because again, who's going to fight for that when the gun ranges get, you know, four mandatory visits per year from a member paying $20 or $30 for a membership range fee? So they're not going to fight anything. Why would they bite the hand that feeds them?
So there's been a form of what you're getting at there is gun clubs and gun associations. They've actually, to a degree, like the regulation, in it's sort of a form of the big players benefiting from the state becoming involved to entrench their position.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, a lot of these range of big organizations have millions and millions of dollars in the bank, and instead of fighting gun bans and fighting for their members, which is what they want them to do, why would they? And they get government grants for ranges. So why would you bite the hand that feeds you? If you got rid of genuine reasons tomorrow, you would get rid of probably in essence of about probably 80 to 85%, probably higher, of your membership base, because they no longer have to be a member to hold a gun license. So they love that. They love that. It's millions of dollars to them. It's a great business model. As I always call it, it's a cash cow. Sure, there's some organizations out there right now that are doing a pretty good job putting a little bit of pressure on the, you know, politicians and the police and sending letters, but, you know, that we've got pro-gun parties as well, Australia-wide in most states, in New South Wales, Victoria, Western Australia. And, you know, that's not helping at this stage either. We vote in pro-gun people that represent us, and, you know, they don't have any power either. And most of them, even now, until 2020, with all these closures, have been relatively silent.
Well, obviously the most high-profile shooter in government is Senator Bridget McKenzie. She was originally the sports minister, which ultimately brought her down because she had that membership of a gun club which received one of those sports grants. And after the election, she was agriculture minister. She was the deputy nationals leader. There's heaps of press photos of her with firearms and that. I'm not sure if you've ever been able to have her on the show or correspond with her, but there does sort of seem to be a few more friendly politicians than there were 20 plus years ago, since the 1996 National Firearms Agreement. I'm not sure what your opinion is on Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party. They've obviously made massive inroads into southern New South Wales, and when David Linehan was in the Senate, he was quite a vocal gun rights supporter.
Yeah. I mean, Bridget McKenzie, I've had her on the show. She was she's nice. But again, she's the National Party. They push party lines. We've seen the Nationals attack parties like the Liberal Democrats, Shooters, Fishers and Farmers over the years, saying, well, you know, the placards come out. Now we don't want to be like America and so forth. Yet their members, you know, or people that support them are farmers. And there seems to be a bit of a disconnect, I guess, between farmers and the sporting shooters, because the farmers already have, you know, the primary producing licenses. They already have the feral pest control licenses that they need. They can already get access to these types of firearms still, even after 1996. But Bridget McKenzie agrees with the National Firearms Agreement. I've had her on the show. We've had some honest discussions. I don't think she really agrees with self-defense, which is the core, one of my core cornerstones of firearms ownership, I think. Of course, you can't own a firearm for self-defense in Australia, but again, that's something I'd like to see change. So while any party that I would vote for supports the National Firearms Agreement and these current laws, I could never, ever vote for. And while she's lovely, she agrees with it. She thinks there needs to be a bit of tinkering around the edges. I mean, tinkering is the, you know, it's the easy way to say it, but I think it needs more than tinkering. But, you know, our organization's trotted out Bridget McKenzie like she was the Holy Grail. And obviously after the fact have happened, I think she was a bit of a victim of politics, I think. I don't think this was really a big deal what happened. Sure, you know, if she's done things that didn't look good and she should have let people know she was a member of a gun club, if she's done the wrong thing, then yeah, she needs to step down. But even after she's doing this and we're getting negative press, you know, our organizations are still putting up, you know, information and photos of her with their unheralded, undying support. I'm like, this is not the time to be putting these types of things up. I mean, the shooting community is already under the spotlight and you're, you know, they're putting out photos and wish to thank Bridget McKenzie. Sure, there's a time if you want to do that. And that time is not right now, I can tell you. You know, I really like David Linehan. I think he was one of our strongest advocates on guns, no doubt about it. Unfortunately, he didn't get a seat in New South Wales, which is disappointing. Fraser Anning, for an example. I mean, some people might not like his politics on some particular issues of immigration. You know, frankly, I don't care about that. I'm only interested in someone fighting about firearms, which is what I'm interested in. And Fraser Anning was also very strong on firearms ownership. And then, unfortunately, both of those weren't elected. We haven't, since the 2019 election here in New South Wales, Shooters, Fishers and Farmers took a huge, a lot of seats away from the National Party. And I think they're hurting a lot over that. But I think they've also stepped away from their core constituency values, which is shooting. For them, I think it's more about water now and farmers and water rights. Again, if people are interested in that, no, that's fine. I'm 100% supportive of that. But I run a gun channel and a gun show and a hunting show. That's not my area of interest. My interest is shooters' rights. And I think they've gone away from their core constituency. And pretty much since the 2019 election in March, what's that, a year ago, we've pretty much heard absolutely zero from them on firearms. So, and with all these gun closures, they might be making a post on the internet about making changes and we're not happy with this, but I can do that. And I don't get paid any money. I get paid a small amount of Patreon support, probably to the value of about $4,000 or $5,000 a year. and they get paid $180,000 a year to advocate for my interests. So I want to start seeing that money being utilized to actually fight for my interest and making a difference, because what this coronavirus has really shows that our organizations, unfortunately, don't have any power, and our political parties that we represent, we elected to represent us, don't have any power either. And that's been 20 years, over 23 years since Port Arthur. So when are we going to have enough numbers to be able to actually make a difference? I mean, the government's just running railroad over us right now, shutting us down, not treating us with respect. And all we ask is to get a little bit of respect and to treat us properly and work together. And that's just not happening. So who to vote for in a pro-gun party, that's up to the individual. I don't tell people who to vote for. David, as I said, David Lionhelm was very strong on guns. I think he was very eloquent in the way he spoke about firearms, made some very good cases. Unfortunately, he just missed out in New South Wales. Beyond those two of the best pro-gun parties, I would have thought, Lionhelm and Anning, and none of them are in Parliament at the moment. So it's going to be really an uphill battle for shooters going forward over, say, the next 10 to 15 years. If we don't see some changes in the next 10 to 15 years, I think we'll be in some serious trouble. If we have another mass shooting in this country, I think there'll be further, further attacks on firearms owners and their rights, thinking that's going to make a difference, because, you know, we know that firearms owners in 99.9% of the situations don't do anything wrong. They're good people. They're like me and you. They're mums, dads, lawyers, fathers, your local Macca's worker, they're tradies, they're government workers, and there's a million of them, and they need to start to be treated with some respect, which is what we deserve.
You mentioned New Zealand, how they'd had, you said, seven gun deaths over the past few years up until the Christchurch shooting, and that's one of the first things that Jacinda Ardern announced that would happen after the shooting, that our gun laws will change. She didn't know what the law would be, but that they would be more in line with the Australian model, as it's now referred to, the Australian gun control model. Said before that in your judgment, they're not as strict as Australia, but that hasn't stopped the authorities and police in New Zealand harassing firearm owners. I'm not sure if you've come across the story of my co-host on Trad Tasman Talk, Dewey DeBoer. He was the first person raided by the New Zealand police for having a prohibited what they thought was a prohibited firearm. They basically, the whole SWAT team was at his Auckland house with his wife and three children, and he seemed to believe he was targeted because he put a submission in about showing a photo of his rifle, which he'd already handed back anyway. And there's also New Zealand's, we think our lockdown is quite draconian. Here in New Zealand, it's even more draconian, where there's no Macca's or KFC or Uber Eats or anything, and there's a lot more harassment on the street by police. What we saw, why you're mentioning the New South Wales police, they've been driving in the parks today. New Zealand police state's even bigger than what you see in New South Wales.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what happened there obviously was a tragedy. It's not something that, you know, law-abiding people would do. Yep, he got a gun license. He was able to get access to these types of firearms. The National Party completely sold out. Now they're trying to claw back the gun-owning vote by saying we oppose registration. I mean, you know, many people are getting caught, criminals in New Zealand, for gun offences sometimes. And this came from, I've got a friend over there, Mike Loader from Kiwi Gun Blog.
Yeah.
He follows up on a lot of this stuff. And, people have been done for not 20 and 30 firearms offences and not being put in prison. They're not being put in prison. People are being spoken to about their political beliefs online and about their firearms ownership. I'm not sure how that's correlated to whether somebody can own a firearm or not. Winston Peters, New Zealand First, I mean, that guy should just be absolutely ashamed of himself, that he's supposed to represent the people of New Zealand and was a strong supporter of gun owners in the past. But when old Winnie gets a sniff of power, he'll roll over in bed, at the first tap on the shoulder. So I think New Zealand First will cop an absolute bollocking at the next election. I really don't think Ardern will be re-elected. I think it'll be close. We'll see what happens. We've seen Simon Bridges, the National Party leader in New Zealand. He's starting to roll over on the guns and put a bit of pressure again on the government. The only one that's really been strong on guns has been David Seymour from the ACT Party in New Zealand. And he's come up with some really good question time in Parliament, especially towards Winston Peters, asking questions. And, I mean, Stuart Nash, the police minister, banning people from his Facebook page, which is fine. He's entitled to do that. You know, he can if he wants to. He's free to do that. You know, he should be ashamed of himself as well, scapegoating firearms owners that haven't done anything wrong. I mean, how would you feel? Because one person does the wrong thing. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people in New Zealand have to hand in a gun thinking New Zealand's going to be any safer because they handed in one particular style of firearm. And it could happen tomorrow. And I think we need to start listening to people from both sides of politics, letting people be heard. And even in 10 years, Tim, of doing this and seeing all this David Elliott stuff with this prohibited firearm and seeing the government shield him from being stood down, keeping his job. I mean, no one has any faith in these politicians anymore. No one has any faith in the police. And like I've said it before, most people you talk to, they say community respect for police and the government as well, as a matter of fact, is at just all-time lows. People can't trust them. People believe they're out to revenue raise. So I'm hoping, you know, the National Party in New Zealand come good. I don't think they will. They've already agreed with the first tranche of gun laws. They've put a bit of a stop on the second tranche of gun laws, but I don't think they're going to have enough people in Parliament to put a stop to it. That includes registration. But again, how does registration stop criminals? I mean, even if Brendan Tarrant registered a firearm and he went and used that firearm to kill people, how is that going to help? You know what I mean? You just good people are much more less likely to do the wrong thing. But yeah, but in 99.9% of situations, like I've said previously, they do the right thing. And even if they don't do the right thing, these things can still happen. And if it's not them, it's criminals. Criminals will get firearms. In most situations, it will be a criminal using a firearm to commit these crimes. And, you know, I've said to friends that I've actually, in my country even, were Labor voters for the last 20 years. And I've told them, I said, people are getting upset about things. There's going to be some sort of mass killing, shooting. I don't know where it's going to be, but it's going to happen. And literally 3 weeks later, New Zealand happened. And I've got friends that were once Labor voters, now voting for One Nation, for an example, in New South Wales Parliament, voting for people like Mark Latham, who used to be, you know, Labor himself and liking what he's saying. He doesn't particularly like firearms, so I wouldn't vote for One Nation. But that's just my personal opinion because, again, we saw that going into a different story, I guess, was the NRA sting with One Nation. One Nation went on to, you know, throw shooters under the bus saying we'd never change gun laws in the country. We saw what we saw on the videos where I think it was Steve Dixon from Queensland and Ashby were with this fake person they allowed to get into their inner circle.
Yeah, it was an incredibly elaborate, It wasn't journalism. It was basically a form of, fake reality TV. Yep. That's what it was.
Yep. Yeah,
and but it was designed clearly to target a political party.
Like, and I don't mind they were talking with the NRA. I would hope David Lionel, when he was in Parliament, and the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers would talk with the NRA. I know David Lionel would, but, you know, I mean, Shooters, Fishers and Farmers have already denounced in their statement after they, in 2019, when they had a press conference, and they denounced the NRA, and they denounced people like David Lionel. And they wouldn't work with Dave. If David was elected, they wouldn't work with him on, on policy. So, I mean, you know, again, you know, I want people to go back to what they should be doing, representing shooters' interests, doing that properly, not agreeing with the National Firearms Agreement, trying to remove some of these restrictions that won't make Australians any less safe. And that seems to be the go-to word, isn't it? We've always heard, oh, we've got to keep you safe. We've got to keep you safe. That's what Lisa Neville was saying. I mean, we all know. You know, it's very difficult, if impossible, for the police to keep you safe. It's just not possible. They can't be on every doorstep, and I don't think they should be expected to.
They can make you feel safe, but that doesn't mean you are safe. And I'm not sure if you've been following the last two it's three summers now. We've had the African youth gang crime wave with the home invasions and carjackings, and obviously it's terrifying for those people who are living in those crime hotspots. And of course, self-defense is illegal, and so in those situations, if those people, if they've got a cricket bat or baseball bat, they use what they can to defend themselves and their family. But if they actually had that, because it's not just firearms, if they had that cricket bat there for self-defense, that's illegal. The same, a woman can't have pepper spray for self-defense. That was one of Senator Fraser Anning's motions. It was after the Eurydice Dixon rape and murder. Fraser Anning put a motion forward that women should be able to carry pepper spray for self-defense, and that was didn't go anywhere as well. So that's how it's completely illegal to have a weapon any type to defend yourself.
Yeah, I mean, New South Wales, that was one good thing done by the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers back in, would have been after John Tingle got in and he changed the laws, that the onus was on the police to prove at the time that the person didn't think their life was in danger. And it's very hard to do that in a court of law, to prove someone didn't feel like they weren't going to be killed by a person. So the onus is on the government or the police or the prosecutor to come up with what was reasonable, but at the time that they need to prove at the time you didn't think your life was in danger. But it's very hard to do that. So that was a great piece of legislation that came out by them. So I can give kudos to John Tingle on that. But they give you the, I guess, legislative framework to be able to defend yourself, but they just don't give you any means to be able to defend yourself. And as you said, if you've got a bat, a knife, a gun, anything to be used that you wish to be self-defense, then you know, that becomes illegal and you can be suffer severe penalties, you know, from the government. So, you know, it's a, like I keep saying, it's a sad state of affairs, but, you know, we keep trudging on, we keep moving forward, trying to develop that relationship with the police, but it just doesn't seem to be happening. And at every turn, they just keep, I'm not sure we can swear on the show, but they just keep shitting on us at every opportunity for the smallest things, over things like people having toys, and you spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, they're wasting taxpayer money, and they lost after 2 years. I mean, really? Really? The government has unlimited resources, as you said earlier, to bankrupt you. Just like they didn't do it to Brad, but he lost a lot of money. He's probably close to that area of having no money because he spent it all on defending himself from this government who has endless amounts of state resources to bankrupt you. That's what they do all the time. They put pressure on people. People that do this show, I'm surprised they haven't even, you know, wanted to knock on my door yet for even advocating just to treat shooters properly. Because all we want is a bit of respect to treat us properly.
We don't, in Australia or New Zealand for that matter, have both a First and Second Amendment. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution guarantees free speech, free assembly. Second Amendment is the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. But we were talking about in New Zealand, that's not just harassment of firearm owners, but making sure that their views are not outside of the allowable opinion, which it shouldn't matter what your politics are. And also we're in a nation as well where if we advocate that gun control be relaxed too liberally, is that allowable speech, as you just said?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's some reasonable changes that we can, you know, change. I mean, look at parts of, let's say, England and New Zealand still. I watch a couple of guys. I just did an interview before I got on with you. And, I mean, they're still allowed suppressors, a.k.a. if you want to go silencer. I mean, they don't completely reduce the report or noise from a firearm. Quite the opposite, actually. They're still quite loud. But it just takes that huge, you know, mountainous crack out of a firearm. And some parts of England, some parts of Europe, even the farmers even mandate that a lot of shooters use suppressors, for an example, to at least reduce somewhat the noise to the surrounding neighborhood, the houses nearby, so they don't disrupt stock and things like that. I mean, I think that'd be a good start, getting things like suppressors. Most countries use them. They're not an issue. It's not, people think, you know, as soon as you talk about a suppressor, like this is the, you know, a contract shooter or something like that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, they think you could shoot someone downstairs and nobody upstairs would hear it. I mean, it's just absurd. Heavy caliber rifles, centerfire rifles, like hunting rifles, still make a huge sound. It just takes that large, huge crack down to a reasonable amount that people can, you know, be able to shoot without hearing protection. And, I mean, you should still use hearing protection, but things like that, like appearance laws in this country, we need to scrap an appearance law, which means in New South Wales, there's guns you can own in Queensland that you can't own in New South Wales because of the type of stock they've got or the way they look. So I think we need to scrap appearance laws. I think self-defense should come in with a firearm in the home as a bare minimum to start. I mean, you know, look at what happened, Tim, to Jill Maher. You probably know Jill Maher, raped and murdered by 22-time rapist Adrian Ernest Bailey. What was that, in about 2014, 2015? You know, she's dead now. So anyone that advocates for not being able to defend themselves, I think, is totally wrong. I'm sure she'd still like to be alive. I'm sure, you know, she was getting married to her husband. Sure, he'd like to be her, to be alive. You know, and often the resistance I get from people on self-defense as well, and, you know, 12% of situations, the weapon of choice that the person uses to defend themselves is taken off them and used against them. Well, what's the morally superior position? I'd rather have that and have the chance of it be taken off me and used against me than be raped or murdered anyway and not have any type of chance. I'll take my chances with pepper spray, a taser, a firearm, whatever it may be, because, you know, I'd rather much be alive. My family would much rather be alive than be dead. And, you know, anyone that I speak to people all the time and they say, oh, no, we shouldn't have this. And that is until it happens to them. And then all of a sudden they're singing a different tune. And sometimes, you know what? Hey, Tim, I voted Labor when I was 18 years old. I didn't know any better. You know, my family voted Labor. I'm from Western Sydney. That's Labor heartland. I didn't know any difference. Now I despise everything about Labor, all their policies. Sometimes they make some reasonable situations, but in general, you know, I'm more conservative. Leave me alone. I'm not hurting anybody. You don't need to get into my business. If I need you, I'll call you. If I don't, I don't need you. I'll look after myself as best as I can. And that's, you know what, in time of need, that's going to happen anyway, because the police will never, ever be there. They can't be there. They can't physically be there. And what are they going to do? Hang on, like Jill Maher, hang on, yeah. Adrian. I just need to call the police before you rape and kill me and bury me in a ditch. I mean, come on, guys, seriously. No one can seriously be against self-defense. And the bare minimum, pepper spray and a taser to start. Bare minimum. Give the women a chance. Give them a chance. Even me. What am I going to do, Tim, if I come to Melbourne and I have 6 or 7, 9 African youths? I'm 6'3". Most of them at 15 are as tall as me. What am I going to do? Do I not have a chance to survive, or do I just have to be attacked and killed?
Yeah, the expression is, might correct me if I mess this up, but when dangerous seconds away, the police are minutes away, and obviously minutes are a whole lot longer than seconds.
Yeah, when seconds count, police are only minutes away. That's the term, you know?
You mentioned the crackdown on toy guns, which is this is how far the demonization of not just firearm users, but guns themselves has been in our culture. For example, they don't want young boys now playing cowboys and Indians with the toy guns. And even there's been reports, not just all over the Western nations, if a young boy in school makes the sort of gun thing, then they'll get written up by the teacher, put up on their permanent record. They might have to have their parents in for like a meeting or referred to a psychologist or something, because they think it's a sign of a future mass killer or something.
You need to go for re-education.
Yeah, that's the term.
You know, I mean, we've dropped a long way. Like I said, I know I don't want to harp on it again, but like these gel blasters, even after that case and Brad actually won that case from Armored Heaven, I mean, the police, they put out this media release saying, sorry, they're still firearms. And even though he won, that was only one case. And I just urge people, if they're, obviously I wouldn't in New South Wales own a gel blaster at this stage, just because I want to keep my gun license and I want to continue this fabulous sport. But, you know, if you are charged with a criminal offense for gel blasters in New South Wales, I mean, contact me on my page. I'll put you into the correct lawyer that will be able to help you. And, you know, we'll see what we can do, because, you know, we've gotten to the point now where, like, really DPP resources are spent on charging a person for 2 years on a toy that on the box says from ages five and up. Like, really? You know, and this is, again, I just don't think police care about their reputation anymore. I just don't think they do. I think they're allowed to get away with too much. I think they need to be absolutely reined in. But how can you be reined in, Tim, when the police minister in New South Wales is caught for doing something and is not held accountable? What message does that send the general public? Yeah. What message does that send firearms owners? A very, very bad one.
Yeah, exactly right. And he's the man at the moment in charge of or directing the police to enforce the social distancing measures. And New South Wales seems to be leading the police state charge, with even people who are at the park just sort of just sunbaking or just wanting to get some fresh air or some vitamin D, the police are going up to them, I think, to basically look like they're doing something to please David Elliott. Because don't forget, it was the New South Wales state government that let that Ruby Princess disembark with all those people who are infected and infected others as well, which is another example. They want us to practice social distancing and self-isolate, yet they had that disaster there. And there's already been some commentary about the New South Wales police. If they're too overzealous, then they're really going to lose the public here, as you've already said. Their standing in the community is, well, especially in your shooting community, is quite low.
Yeah. I mean, I think police should only get involved where they absolutely have to in a situation. And I think that's what they should be there for. I mean, people laugh. They're wearing, riot gear now. They've got, the things they're driving around. They're not the army. They shouldn't be the army. We're not there to have the riot squad walking down the street, enforcing the law. Like, I keep laughing. I talk to my friends about it, and they said, what would you do? And I say, well, I'd go back to what it was in the 80s and 90s, a button-up shirt, the top hat, the slacks, the boots. Respect again for the community, and respect again for the police. I think that's where, instead of wearing knee pads and riot gear and, holsters strapped to your legs with batons and capsicum and pepper spray, sure, that's fine. I think we should just go back to where they're respected by the community, 80s and 90s, where they looked the part, they were helping people, they're in the community, and they had that professionability about them. I think that's what we should do, and get the respect back for the police. They, I think they do deserve, but they're just gone the wrong way. And I don't think even the police minister can control them. I don't even think the commissioner can control them. That they just, there's no control. And the minister needs to pull these people in line significantly, whether it's the commissioner, whether it's the head honchos. Absolute change needs to be made at that higher level to get that community respect back. But all we want is to be given a fair go. That if you relax things a little bit, things aren't going to change. There aren't going to be, mass shootings. And if people do that, if someone wants to do that now, Tim, they're certainly going to go out and do it anyway. I mean, look at the police.
If there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, and look at the police Facebook page, New South Wales Police.
Oh, it's had some shockers. I remember, what was it? I read it out on an Uncuckables episode about 6 months ago, when they were trying to do some sort of witty message about make sure you gain affirmative consent from women when you have sex with them after a night out.
Yeah, just got to get that permission slip signed and all that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'd like to see, some things change, that we can have effective change on things without, alarming the community. But again, we haven't done good enough from our side to alleviate the concerns of the general community either. But when you've had 20 years of a barrage of the Liberal Party, which is supposed to be conservative, right, mind you, which they aren't conservative at all. I wouldn't even consider them centre.
Well, that's why they haven't got conservative in their name, I think.
No, I know. It's like, I would consider them maybe left of centre, and Labor now being the far left, with the Greens being the extreme left. But
extreme far left.
Extreme far left, exactly. And, they would take guns off owners tomorrow without a heartbeat. If there was a legislation on the table from the Liberal Party, they say they wouldn't vote for it, and they, support sporting shooters to go about their business. They don't really. They would ban any gun tomorrow. I would be out of all my guns would be taken because I couldn't have them anymore. The best thing we can do is keep the Greens out of Parliament, and Queensland have done a pretty good job keeping them out of Parliament in Queensland. So.
Obviously, all of Australia knows about the federal Greens senators such as Sarah Hanson-Young, but they may not be familiar with the ones in the New South Wales Parliament, or even worse, such as, well, I know quite a bit about David Shoebridge, and he, as you said, he would take away everyone's guns in an instant.
Yeah, we've got to be very careful about the Greens. They're very dangerous, in my opinion. People like David Shoebridge, Sarah Hanson-Young. I mean, the stupidity of Sarah Hanson-Young is just unmatched. How she's allowed to be in Parliament is absolutely, how she's the first pick is even beyond me. But, you know, one rule for one rule for her. She goes out and spends all kinds of money, you know, government money, where, you know, some of this stuff was unexplained. You know, again, one rule for one politicians, and one rule for the general community. And people are just getting sick to death of getting a raw deal. Such as us shooters, you know, we want some respect, and hopefully we get that. Whether it will happen, I think it's getting worse. We need to take back. I think our organisations need to forget about, yeah, political parties can only do so much, which is not a lot. We need to start, you know, really using the court system, getting that money behind us. Any changes that happen should be fought immediately in court. And I think that's what we should do moving forward. And, you know, that, so the government knows that at every opportunity, if you try and screw shooters over that haven't done the wrong thing and you're targeting them, we're going to, yeah, okay, you might have enough money too, but we do too. There's a million shooters now. And with these organizations are getting a lot of money. So we're going to start re-diverting those resources to fighting the government on every turn, every single thing, every time. And you'll soon learn that if you go to do something, you'll be, we might lose on 80% of the occasions, but they need to know that we will fight it at every turn. We will spend as much money as we need to fight these laws that don't only affect the law abiding and not criminals. Why don't you divert those resources to actually attacking criminals? Because this is the thing. They don't know where the guns are from the criminals.
Yeah.
Criminals don't get
guns. It's easier to persecute people who are more law abiding and compliant to begin with. It's harder to go after the professional career criminals or the gangs.
Yep, because law-abiding shooters are an easy target because the police and government know where to find their guns. I mean, I've written to the minister, this is several years ago now, but on the firearms registry, and I've said, listen, have you done a like public benefit analysis on this? What crimes have been solved from registering firearms to spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars every year to register firearms from good law-abiding people? What crimes have been stopped? We saw a fellow just probably a year ago, was married to a Russian lady. They obviously got broken up. He had two kids with her. This is in the Baulkham Hills area here in near Western Sydney. He, for some reason, was refused by the commissioner for a license, but eventually was given approval. He was turned away from the St. Mary's range, pistol range, because they just didn't like what they were seeing on paper and the commissioner's permit. So if you have a commissioner's permit for approval, it means you've either done something wrong in the past, or they've the person applying for the gun license has appealed the decision, and the final approval to have the license has come from the commissioner. So it's something bad anyway. Anyway, subsequently, he got his pistol license. After about 18 months, he shot himself and his own kids. Oh. I mean, you know, and then the poor lady had to live with that. And then subsequently, I think 6 months after that, she committed suicide. Yeah. So, again, it doesn't stop that happening.
Yeah.
So how's it going to stop criminals? I mean, again, these are situations where that guy should not have having a gun. And I know there was big waves going through the New South Wales Firearms Registry because they're the ones that approved him to have this gun, you know. So why did they approve it if they knew he was trouble? And then now they were scrambling to blame somebody else, or the media outlets were scrambling to blame the Rangers. When no, the Rangers sent him away. You know, said, no, we don't like the look of this. Go speak to the registry and get, you know, some confirmation from them on a way to move forward. But he went through that process of 18 months to get his pistol license, to do what he had to do, and then use that firearm for, you know, illegal purposes, which, you know, we don't approve of, obviously, but just goes to show it can't stop good people doing the wrong thing, and it can't stop bad people. Obviously, more so criminals are the ones doing the wrong thing in very minuscule cases. Like I've said previously on this show, 99.999% of people do the right thing. They follow the law. They follow what the police are telling them. And all they do, mate, is want a fair go. And they're just not getting that at the moment.
Well, it's like what you said. You've shooters have got to do a better job of making their voices heard and their presence known. I want to finish up now just on a side, well, not really a side note, but obviously in we've talked about the panic buying in the supermarkets. People started with the toilet paper, then they moved on to the staples, rice, pasta, then they went for mince and chicken and potatoes. We've had a lot of the agricultural bodies and the agricultural minister, David Littleproud, say that we've got enough food here in Australia to feed three Australians. We're a net exporter of food, so there's you don't need to fear that we're going to run out of food. And obviously we've had a lot of businesses shut down, but it's clear that obviously farming is an essential industry because our nation needs to be fed during this this pandemic. I'm not sure if you're in contact with anyone in farming or agribusiness, if they've seen quite drastic changes in how they're operating in the past month, because I know that there's been a lot of governments have made sure they've cut as much red tape as possible to get food from the producers to the supermarkets as quickly as possible. Even the supermarkets are cutting out their distribution centers. So I just wanted to get maybe if you've had information relayed to you.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of farmers that are friends and stuff, and the government has, I think as of yesterday in Queensland, I'm not sure about WA 100%, but I know in Queensland they were shut down for about a day, and then they've opened up again, but only for primary producers, farmers, pest controllers, but not for Category A and B firearms owners like myself. So they've still got access to ammunition, those exemptions, same thing in Victoria. I think I read the minister's write up yesterday said, you know, pest controllers, farmers, primary producers can still get access to firearms, you know. But this is the thing, how's that stopping people? People are already making reports from Bunnings. I went to Bunnings yesterday and there were heaps of people there not adhering to social distancing rules. People were going into JB Hi-Fi, they had specials on. TVs flying out the door, people on top of each other, and it's not an issue. So why are they trying to say this is about the virus? We all know that's a lie. It's a blatant attack on law-abiding firearms owners because people are buying up big. But I think there's multiple reasons of that. And when any pandemic happens, people say, well, maybe there might not be any stock coming in. Maybe we want to buy some emissions. It's not going to be coming in from the supplier. We need to stock up now. So over the next 6 months, if ammunition becomes slim or firearms aren't being imported or it's very slow because of this pandemic, they can still get access and buy up now. So it's they're not stocking up to become the next militia. They're stocking up because, again, the dollar is very bad and we need and then they need what the things they need now for the next 6 months, and they're unsure. Just like anything, everyone's panic buying everything at the moment, not necessarily because they need it. Sometimes they need it. Sometimes it's just because they think, you know, the world's going to end tomorrow.
But in terms of my question was more aimed at the farmers, obviously, well, they're quite socially distanced and isolated out in the bush, but there's been, it's still business as usual in terms of growing and cultivating crops.
Yeah, no problem whatsoever. They're not having any issues. I've got a farmer down south here in New South Wales. I spoke to a couple of days ago. I mean, He's making funny videos on Facebook now just for a bit of fun. I mean, he lives in a town of like 400 people. So in that town, it's obviously not really an issue. It's probably, as far as I'm told, no one's got it there in his small town, which is down near Swan Hill in Victoria. So there's no issues with there. They're still getting access to the requirements they need. Farming's still continuing. I mean, it has to continue. As you know, farmers don't stop. They're 365-day-a-year jobs, so they just keep going, and they have access to, you know, the things. But like I said before, that's not going to solve the situation. Gun shops and business aren't going to survive. So yeah.
It's certainly we're going through a difficult 6 months they started with the cafes and restaurants. They've moved on to other services as well. But I think the aim of my question is that we'll certainly thank the farmers after this, appreciate them a bit more, because we've way too undervalued them, and yeah, there'll be a lot of people that need to be helped to get up on their feet. I don't think the government with all their measures is going to help everyone through it. It's going to be afterwards. We're going to help ourselves back up from the damage that they've inflicted. Like I said, as you said, it's an uncertain time, and so you can't blame people for wanting to make sure that they have what they need.
Yeah, it's true. And the farmers, depending on how many animals they've got on their property. I mean, my farmer wouldn't buy ammunition all that often. I've spoke to him in the past, and he might buy, 100, 150 rounds of 223 ammo for, some pigs or something, or some small pigs, or some rabbits on his property, or hares, or whatever it may be. So they're not big, generally big buyers of rifles and ammunition anyway. It's just a tool for them. So, it's the average shooter that's really going to suffer. And you'd be interested to know, I mean, in America, they actually deemed gun shops an essential service.
Yeah.
So gun shops must remain open. People are buying guns, so we need to shut that down. I mean, again, it's happening legally. This has really brought out a lot of bad things that this government is doing, that the police are doing, especially too about the medical association, the AMA, for an example, that are coming out and getting in the government and the police ear saying we need to do this, this, and this, and then them just listening to it. I mean, that's not their role. It's not their role. Their role is to advocate for nurses and doctors and things like that, not tell the government, we might have to sew up an extra few people, so we don't want to have to do that. It's like, well, you get paid to do that. You're provided by the Medicare system to help people, or if not, private health insurance. So I don't know where that's coming into it, but I don't know. We'll see what happens, I guess. Hopefully they drop the restrictions for shooters as soon as possible, because people are going to lose jobs.
Yeah.
I mean,
as Scott Morrison himself said, an essential worker is someone with a job. You don't want it because of some anti-gun bigotry to shut down businesses where there's no medical reason to do so.
Yeah, and Lisa Neville said that. Like I said before, she said that. She said, well, the numbers have increased. I mean, so what that they've increased? What does that matter? Law-abiding people have got the guns. They're not the issue. So why is it a problem? We just don't like it, so we'll just shut it down. I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, can you imagine, Tim, if we were, a person of, we were, let's say, dark-skinned, gay, whatever, doesn't matter, right? We support everyone in the community. If we vilified the Muslim community, the gay community, like we are being vilified, mate, there'd be public outrage.
You wouldn't be able
to walk anywhere.
Hashtags on social media, everything.
Exactly. You wouldn't be able to survive. And we've seen people that go out on a limb and say things like that. They get absolutely ostracized, kicked out of their jobs. But yet it seems almost to be a sport in this country to vilify gun owners and discriminate against them. And it's okay. If this happened to the, other communities, minority communities, it'd be public outrage. You'd be on the Twitter police would be out onto us, and they'd be threatening me with taking away my job. But yeah, with the shooting community, absolutely no problem. You can say or do whatever you to them. You can hassle them to your heart's content, because they're such good people, they'll just keep taking it. That's the problem.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Jason, for sharing your expertise. You're not only, as I introduced you, an expert on this, you're also very eloquent and, the most successful outdoor podcaster in Australia. So it's no wonder. And I'd like to give a special shout out to Reg Penny for helping arrange this. He's a regular on our Uncuckables program, as well as running New South Wales Patriots against the extreme left. Like you said, Jason, uncertain times. We'll see how the concerns that we both have will play out.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm an expert. I just say I'm very, very passionate about it. I've been doing this for 10 years. I know about gun laws, and I'm happy to challenge anybody, anywhere, anytime on the gun laws in this country. And, if we look at the facts of other countries and not just look at one country like the United States, we need to look at it as a rounded whole. I think we can come to a consensus, a way to move forward to, not only satisfy the community, but satisfy gun owners and all live together in happiness. Because, again, like I keep saying, we're the really good people from all walks of life. and we just want to be treated fairly. And I'm passionate about it. I do a lot of research on this stuff, and you know, I've been on multiple radio stations fighting people on 2GB, 2UE, ABC, you name it. When gun owners are getting a bad deal, I'm on the phone trying to defend them and bringing at least my sense of what I've learned and the facts to the table, and hopefully try and change a few people's minds. So we'll see how it goes for the future.
Yeah, that's excellent. Well, all the best, and I'm sure we'll talk again sometime soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that was quite an informative chat there, as Binary Agenda pointed out. I certainly learned a lot, not just through what he said, but also his passion as well, basically, because he is so connected with the firearm and shooting community in Australia. Now, I know with that we've got Dear Beltran live in 10 minutes, so what I'll do to end the show is what I do on every edition of Wilmsfront right now, is give you an update on the global and Australian coronavirus infections and deaths. The website that I use, as I've said previously, is the Worldometer. I'll just refresh the page here just in case. It's there we go there. So coronavirus cases, that's worldwide, 862,495, deaths 42,510, recovered 179,108. And if we have a look at the country by country, USA is now at the top with 188,000 cases. They have now just passed 4,000 deaths. Italy still has the most with 12,000 deaths, and Spain is second with 8,464 deaths. China, they claim they've only had 7 more deaths, still only just above 3,000 and 81,000 infections. Yeah, we really believe that. The same with Iran's numbers there. Germany and France, they're catching up to Spain and Italy, though Germany's deaths per total 1 million population is significantly less than France's, as you can see here. Now, if we go down to Australia, we've just got just shy of 5,000 cases, 4,862, had 99 new cases today. We're up to 21 deaths. Our deaths per 1 million population still 0.8. Total cases per million population 191. If we go onto the federal government's health website, COVID-19 as they refer it to. So this gives you a state by state breakdown here. So New South Wales has now got over 2,000 cases. Victoria is nearly at 1,000. In Queensland, the growth in that state has slowed dramatically. It was almost at the same as Victoria last week, but they've got 781 cases. Western Australia, 392. South Australia, 367. Tasmania, 68. Northern Territory, 18. Australian Capital Territory, 84. And this is the curve here, which is, this is the aim of these draconian containment measures, flattening the curve. And you can see that the curve is flattening here. See, we had this peak here of around about 400 cases one day. It's slowly been going down. So I know a lot of people have told me that when government suspends civil liberties, it's hard to get them back. We hope that things are different in this situation, given that they are extreme, the removal of our civil liberties, that you can only be in public with one other person. That's one of the most extreme incursions on civil liberties in Australian government's federal estate have ever introduced. So if we can keep flattening that curve and even have a dip of that curve, then we are going to be in both this economic and civil illiberal stage for as little as possible. It's certainly not going to end in in 2 weeks, as Donald Trump admitted today. He's extended the social distancing measures in the United States for until April 30, another month. So certainly this is the new day-to-day now. And the United States, they've now said prepare for 100,000 to 200,000 deaths. The coronavirus pandemic in New York has now been on track to be deadlier than the lives lost in 9/11, which is pretty horrific. Andrew Cuomo, the governor, his brother is Chris Cuomo, the CNN host. Chris Cuomo has now been diagnosed with coronavirus, so he's now doing his Cuomo primetime from home. So he's still on the air on CNN, but doing it now from home. So that's how insane things are getting in New York. But that's it from me for tonight and Wilmsfront for the week. I will be back, hopefully back at the normal Monday time next week, Monday 7 p.m. Melbourne time on the Tim Wilms YouTube channel. My guest will be the operator and also the editor of the SJW Central YouTube channel. Now, an interesting fact about him is he is based in Tel Aviv in Israel. They have got really strict containment measures in Israel. You're not allowed more than 100 meters outside of your house there. So it'll be interesting too, because Australia and Israel are around about the same amount of infections and deaths. So it'd be interesting to speak with somebody from a comparative country there. I'll be back tomorrow night with the regular Thursday Uncuggables, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on the Uncuggables YouTube channel. Please check out my own personal website for links to my social media and the podcast version of this show, timwilms.com. Visit theunshackled.net for latest news and for the Unshackled Productions archive and hub. And of course, all of Unshackled Productions, including Wilmsfront, are being backed up on rationalrise.tv, operated by James Fox Higgins. Okay, enjoy Dear Beltran live now, and I'll see you tomorrow night for Uncuckables, and Wilmsfront will be back next week. Good night, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com or Rationalrise TV to view the archive of episodes. And keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows. And to keep up with the latest real news and analysis.